Terror in Paris. This is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt, reporting tonight from Paris.
Good evening. The anxiety level here in Paris and across much of Europe showing no sign of abating, with authorities now saying there may be still another suspect in Friday's attack on the loose. The jitters only further amplified this evening when a German soccer stadium was hurriedly evacuated in the face of what was called a concrete threat, with ISIS threatening to attack the U.S. In Washington, police in and around D.C. are ratcheting up security in ways we can see and in many ways we can't. We went right to the top to get answers from the police chief in charge. Also tonight, the feds are closely monitoring who's flying into U.S. airports, while the FBI intensifies surveillance of potential terrorism suspects already on American soil. Our justice correspondent, Pete Williams, has details.
Beefed up security on Washington's metro subway system, around monuments and memorials, big tourist attractions. At the U.S. Capitol, police are urging members and their staffs to use underground passageways as much as possible. Washington, D.C. police say officers are well aware of the ISIS threat.
Really, our change in what we're doing and how we position ourselves changed as things were unfolding on Friday. The addition of the ISIS video really just reinforces what we were already doing.
NBC News has learned that French authorities have provided the U.S. 20 fingerprint images from the Paris attackers. No matches with U.S. watch lists were found. Airlines are keeping their schedules of flights from the U.S. to Paris and back, but the U.S. is intensively scrutinizing passenger lists on inbound flights. Intelligence officials say U.S. terror databases contain nearly 2,800 names with connections to France, 800 of them tied to Syria. Those names are getting extra attention for any attempts to travel. And FBI agents are stepping up their surveillance on known terror suspects in the U.S. Roughly 50 are getting the closest attention, a senior official says. The ISIS video threat against the U.S. and Washington is leading to some jitters. A school district in Maryland today canceled its planned field trips to the city, and four people were removed from a Spirit Airlines flight this morning preparing to take off from Baltimore after a passenger said one of them appeared to be watching an ISIS video on a cell phone. No arrests.
Washington is a city with nearly 30 police agencies, all of them told to be more vigilant. One of them, the Secret Service, is preparing to protect the French president when he arrives here next week. Lester.
All right, Pete, thank you. As we mentioned, the manhunt continues for the terror suspect whose brother was killed during the Paris attacks. Now a third brother, who was detained and later released, is publicly pleading with this fugitive to give himself up. Our Keir Simmons has more from Belgium, a hot zone of police activity in the wake of the attacks here.
4 days after the Paris massacre, the eighth suspect, Salah Abdeslam, is still being hunted by police. His brother Mohammed today urged him to turn himself in. 2 days before the attacks, a neighbor spoke to Salah and another brother, Ibrahim, and said nothing seemed amiss.
He was really calm.
On Friday, Ibrahim blew himself up outside the Comte Voltaire Café in Paris. His neighbor says he never showed any sign of religious fanaticism.
No, never. Never.
He told us Ibrahim owned his own café in Brussels, where drugs were sold.
People stopped the car here for 2-3 minutes, the time to buy.
Another woman confirmed the story. The police did nothing, she says. The killers who came from here are part of a shadowy underworld, fertile ground for ISIS recruiting.
Criminal gangs sell illegal weapons from here, the Gare du Midi area of Brussels. It's known that the men who attacked the Paris magazine, Charlie Hebdo, bought their Kalashnikovs from just such an arms dealer.
The young people are being brainwashed, this man told me. Then eggs were thrown. In this tense neighborhood, we were not welcome. While somewhere here, others who could be involved in the murders of 129 people may be hiding. Keir Simmons, NBC News, Brussels.
Secretary of State John Kerry here in Paris today expressed his support to French President François Hollande and offered his condolences. I also got the chance to sit down with Secretary Kerry, and I asked him, in the wake of the attacks here and the recent bombing of that Russian plane, whether the U.S. had underestimated the growing capabilities of ISIS.
They have gained great expertise over a period of time, and they have some people in ISIS who've been fighting in the terror network for a period of time. So they have access to C4. They have access to explosives. Everybody knows that. They're making IEDs every single day.
So you weren't surprised by what we saw in Paris?
I was shocked by it, not surprised.
And with ISIS's growing expertise comes a growing reach, the ability to strike far from their strongholds in Syria and Iraq. Deadly bombings in Paris, Beirut, and we learned today in Sinai, confirmation that it was a bomb that brought down that Russian plane, killing all 224 people aboard. So the question remains, how can ISIS be defeated? Here's our chief foreign correspondent, Richard Engel.
Russia says it now knows unequivocally that a 2-pound homemade bomb brought down its plane over Sinai late last month. President Putin promised a harsh response. Wherever they are hiding, we will find them in any spot on the planet and punish them, he said. And Russia started that punishment against ISIS, which claimed responsibility for the attack by bombing its capital in Syria, the city of Raqqa. Raqqa is now in the crosshairs of three different air forces. The Russians, who stepped up their attacks today, the French, with 10 aircraft carrying out strikes today in reprisal for Paris, and the U.S., which has been bombing Raqqa for a year, last week to kill ISIS executioner Jihadi John. But will these combined airstrikes bring ISIS down?
Everybody in the world now is bombing, you know, one side or another, but the bottom line is you can't use air power with restrictive rules of engagement and nobody on the ground to great effect.
So if airstrikes alone won't work, how can ISIS be defeated? Some say send in American troops, but that would be a new Iraq-style war, something the public is unlikely to accept. Others say leave it to the Arab states, but despite some promises and a wave of airstrikes early in the fight, Arab participation has dropped off. So the White House is sticking to its strategy, trying to develop what it calls reliable allies on the ground. But so far, those allies have been in short supply and divided.
The White House says its current strategy of airstrikes combined with a few allies on the ground is the only feasible option. But it's leaving ISIS with a base and a growing list of terrorist attacks to its credit. Lester?
Richard Engel, thanks. The political battle is heating up back at home as more than half the governors in the country are now protesting Syrian refugees entering their states, and some in Congress want to change the process of allowing them in. Secretary Kerry, in our conversation today, told me the U.S. must remain vigilant in screening refugees, but we shouldn't automatically shut them out. And NBC's Hallie Jackson has some of the faces of the crisis who actually did find refuge in America.
Beaten in Syria, not just Kamal.
I'm sorry.
His 6-year-old son, too. Assad's policemen broke Badr's arm, Kamal says, before the family escaped to find a better life in Houston.
I miss my mother, and my father, and my friend.
Like Badr, half the 2,000 Syrian refugees in the U.S. are kids. Fewer than 50 are single males of combat age. But it's that group that's most alarming for some.
We cannot let terrorists take advantage of our compassion.
Republican leaders are hoping to press pause on letting Syrians into the U.S., with the White House doing damage control today, as more than half the nation's governors, so worried about security, say they're refusing, opposing, or suspending Syrian refugee resettlement. The states don't really have the authority to do that, but Congress does.
I think is absolute lunacy.
Senator Ted Cruz intends to introduce a bill to block Syrian Muslim refugees.
Overstepped their bounds.
Now the subject of political ads, the refugees a top issue for presidential candidates, Jeb Bush trying to find a middle ground.
We have a noble tradition of accepting refugees, but in this particular case, given the circumstances, I think there ought to be thorough vetting.
Critics worry about how to vet someone with no papers, but the toughest way to get into the U.S. is as a refugee. The Obama administration says refugees are screened at the highest level, overseas interviews, background checks from multiple agencies, more scrutiny on Syrians, a painstaking process, as Kamal discovered. 2 years after he applied, he finally arrived, unable to speak English. Now, he knows enough to speak out.
I want to send a message for American people. We are human.
Tonight here on Capitol Hill, Republican leadership is finishing up a bill to make security screenings so tough it would take significantly longer for Syrian refugees to enter the United States. That vote likely to happen Thursday. Lester?
Allie, thank you. Still ahead tonight, we'll shift from Paris to an NBC News exclusive interview. Actor Charlie Sheen reveals for the first time publicly to Matt Lauer that he is living with HIV and says he's paid out millions in hush money to keep it a secret until now. Also, how to talk to your kids about the terror attacks in Paris. The touching viral video of a dad here in Paris helping his little boy make sense of it all. Back now from Paris with some of the other news of the day, starting with a revealing interview that has so many people talking. There are more than a million Americans living with HIV, and this morning, Charlie Sheen added his name to the list, the Hollywood star admitting he's paid out $10 million in hush money to keep it secret. He sat down exclusively with NBC's Matt Lauer on Today to tell the world his diagnosis and why he's speaking out now.
I'm here to admit that I am, in fact, HIV positive.
By his own account, Charlie Sheen has lived on the wild side. And the diagnosis 4 years ago of HIV would be a life-changing moment.
It's a hard three letters to absorb, you know? It's a turning point in one's life.
Charlie says he's decided to tell his story now because he was facing betrayal and extortion from people who found out the truth.
Are you still paying some of these people?
Not after today, I'm not.
Have you had unprotected sex on any occasion since your diagnosis?
Yes, but the two people that I did that with were under the care of my doctor, and they were completely warned ahead of time.
Have you knowingly, or even perhaps unknowingly, transmitted the HIV virus to someone else since your diagnosis?
Impossible.
Sheen says the four antiretroviral drugs he takes every day have lowered the level of HIV in his blood to undetectable amounts. His personal physician.
We can't say that that's zero, but it's a very, very low number.
Do you know how you contracted the virus?
Sitting here today, not entirely, no.
Winning!
Charlie Sheen understands that some of the reckless things he's done up until now are partly why he's where he is today.
There's a lot about that I'm not proud of. It's, you can only hear winning in the streets so many times.
The stigma that is attached to this diagnosis is one of the worst parts about it. People don't take action, they don't get help because of that stigma.
Sure.
Do you still feel that stigma?
Not anymore. I don't. I have a responsibility now to better myself and to help a lot of other people.
For more of Matt's full interview with Charlie Sheen, visit our website. We're back in a moment with a scare in the sky. A passenger on a U.S.-bound plane trying to open the exit door mid-flight. We're back from Paris with more of the day's news. And late word from the campaign trail, Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal says he's suspending his campaign, dropping out of the GOP race for president. That leaves 14 candidates left running on the Republican side. Also news of another air scare today, this time on a British Airways flight. It was heading from London to Boston. Imagine this, at 35,000 feet, authorities say a drunk woman tried to open the plane's exit door during flight. She was quickly restrained. And the plane was met by police upon touchdown at Boston Logan Airport. There doesn't appear to be any link to terrorism. Blizzard conditions wreaking havoc in the High Plains states. In Denver, which saw its first blizzard warning in 5 years, the storm forced about 150 flights to be canceled. Snow also hit Oregon, but right now heavy rain and high winds are the biggest threats to the Pacific Northwest. A separate system brought thunderstorms to the southwest. Tomorrow, about 20 million folks are at risk for flash floods from Louisiana on into Illinois. And believe it or not, the Thanksgiving travel rush is just a week away. And tonight, AAA says the roads and skies are going to be more packed than they've been in years. Nearly 47 million Americans expected to go 50 miles or more from home. That's the highest number since 2007. Nearly 90% of travelers will be driving and paying much less at the pump than last year. The average price of gas nationwide is down to $2.15 a gallon. When we come back here in a moment, the video shared by millions, a dad finding words of comfort for his son, frightened after the attacks here in Paris. Finally tonight, it's been a rough several days here in Paris, of course. We grown-ups find ways to work through our grief and our sadness, but it's hard for kids. Hard to explain all this to kids. But our Kelly Cobiella shows us a posting on Facebook. It's been seen 11 million times. It's gone viral. It's about a father who found the perfect way to explain this to his child.
As Paris tries to heal, it's hard enough for adults to understand why it happened. But what if you're seeing it all from down here, like this little boy, who told a French reporter he was afraid.
Ils ont les pistolets, ils peuvent nous tirer dessus parce qu'ils sont très très méchants.
C'est pas grave, ils ont des pistolets, nous on a des fleurs.
Bah les fleurs, ça fait rien, c'est pour.
Si regarde, tu vois, tout le monde pose des fleurs.
Oui.
C'est pour combattre les pistolets.
C'est pour protéger.
Voilà.
10-year-old Alexandra lost a teacher in the attacks.
She doesn't feel safe.
Even the youngest seemed to know.
She told me, okay, this time friends lost the fight. I mean, and I said, yes, it's true. It's true in a way, but it will never happen again.
Those words of reassurance just help.
C'est pour nous protéger les fleurs et les bougies.
Ça va mieux du coup?
Oui, ça va mieux.
Trying to make sense of the world at a time of so much change. Kelly Cobiella, NBC News, Paris.
All of us tried to make sense of it. That's our broadcast for tonight. Thank you for being with us. I'm Lester Holt. For all of us at NBC News, good night.